Good morning, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, Finn at OffbeatOregon.com, and this is the Offbeat Oregon History Podcast. Thank you for loading me down and queuing me up today, and I hope you enjoy the show. This is a story from Old Port Orford. It's about a dory fisherman who rescued some stranded sailors. He rescued them directly from a Coast Guard boat. The conditions were too rough even for a legendary Coast Guard 36-foot motor lifeboat to make it through the breakers, so a fisherman brought them ashore, two by two, in his rowboat. As a side note, there was clearly something wrong with a 36-footer, because a healthy one of those can take about 35 people anywhere through anything. But this story was first published on December 25th, 2011, and here it goes. If you had to ride out a major storm at sea off the Oregon coast, what vessel would you choose? Here are your choices. An 1,185-ton steam schooner, a 36-foot U.S. Coast Guard motor lifeboat, or an 18-foot fishing dory. Easy question, right? But not for the 24 sailors and officers aboard the 1,185-ton steam schooner Willapa, whose lives were saved two by two by a fishing dory in skilled hands one stormy morning in 1941 off Port Orford. Here's what happened. In 1941, the Willapa was the last of a dying breed. The wooden steam schooners that had been the mainstay of West Coast lumber shipping since about 1890. These were small, maneuverable steamships ranging from 90 to 200 feet or so in length. They had to be tiny to fit into the doghole ports that they worked out of, especially in the Northern California coast, but that left them unusually vulnerable when nasty weather came along. Of the several hundred of these that were built, the overwhelming majority ended up on rocks or beach, or simply pounded apart by enormous seas while wallowing along with tons of lumber piled on their decks. And that third thing is exactly what was happening to the Willapa on the black, stormy night of December 1st, 1941. Actually, it was probably the very early morning of December 2nd, but you get the idea. The Willapa was getting to be an old vessel, which may have contributed to her breakup. She was built at Cruzen Banks in North Bend during World War I. Now, on the eve of World War II, her career was over. The persistent pounding of the waves finally started opening up seams, and the water started pouring in. Captain Oscar Peterson ordered distress flares fired off. The dying ship lit up the skies with rockets, one after another, until the lot of them was gone and the ship was left in inky, stormy blackness. Luckily, the Coast Guard lookout saw the show and scrambled the rescue crews into one of the service's legendary 36-foot motor lifeboats. Out to sea they went to see what they could do. But by this time the Willapa was out of flares, and the lifeboat crew could find nothing on the mountainous seas. Surely at some point the rescuers must have given the ship up for lost, but they kept searching until morning came. In the light of dawn, the lifeboat crew found the stricken Willapa and got there just in time. Now well and truly dead, the Willapa was fully awash, boilers out, getting ready to roll over. Being made of wood, she wasn't going to sink, but she wouldn't be of any use at all for life preservation floating upside down in 30-foot seas and covered with barnacles. Moreover, in the 50-degree waters off the Oregon coast, it's the cold that does the real killing. These men had to be taken off that ship immediately. So into and onto the 36-footer piled all 24 crew members. By the time the last one was rescued, the ship was on its side, almost all the way under. Theoretically, the thing to do would have been to take 12 men at a time, but had they done that, the other 12 would not have been alive when the lifeboat returned for them. So crammed with men like a can of sardines, the motor lifeboat worked its way toward the shore. In the giant offshore swells, it was still good and seaworthy, though overloaded, but the life-saving crew knew that when they got to the breakers near the shore, it would be over in a few seconds. There just wasn't enough freeboard to get the overloaded boat through them and safely to land. There surely were other problems with the boat as well, although the sources don't say so. On paper, a 36-foot motor lifeboat should have been more than capable of taking 24 men to shore. But for whatever reason, on this particular day, this particular MLB was not. Enter the fisherman. His name was James Combs. He had a fishing dory, the type famously used by fishermen at Cape Kiwanda, and he knew how to use it. According to James Gibbs, he handled it like a rowboat in a mill pond. Out through the surf he went, rowing the 800 yards past the breakers to the wallowing lifeboat just beyond. There he took on two passengers and rowed back, and he did it again, and again, and again. Eventually, Combs had enough of the surplus crew members off the motor lifeboat that the rescue vessel could safely bring the rest into shore. And yes, every single one of them made it. There were no casualties in this wreck. As for the Willapa, it broke up in just a few hours, and a couple days later started washing up on shore as driftwood. So, what's your call? The steam schooner, the motor lifeboat, or the dory? Of course, if the steam schooner hadn't been old and tender and probably waterlogged, it would have surely been just fine. And if the motor lifeboat hadn't been packed with so many castaways that it was barely seaworthy, it would have been a fine choice. For most of us, the only choice, the best choice, by far. But if it came with an experienced Oregon Coast dory fisherman like James Combs at the oars, you just might be better off in a little open fishing boat. Well, that's our show for today. This podcast is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. In addition to this podcast, it includes a weekly newspaper column, a series of live history shows, a daily RSS feed to catch on your smartphone newsreader, a Facebook page, and a couple other minor components. Photographs and other visual goodies that go with today's show are at offbeatoregon.com, where you'll also find full citations to sources for this story. The podcast is covered under a Creative Commons license. For details, see offbeatoregon.com/cc. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band, atlasstringband.com, and was written by Carmen Ficarra. I do this for learning and for fun, so I don't sell advertising or ask for donations. But if you enjoy Offbeat Oregon History and you'd like to support it, you can always pick up a copy of my book. If you enjoy the show, I can pretty much guarantee you'll enjoy the book. It's called Wicked Portland. It's published by the History Press in 2012, and they're available at community bookstores, or you can order a signed copy from the store link at offbeatoregon.com. It sells for $20. Finally, if you're ever in Corvallis, drop me a line. We can grab a cup of coffee maybe and talk history. I'm at finn@offbeatoregon.com. Our next show will be coming your way at around 6 a.m. tomorrow morning. Until then, go ahead and fill up the rest of today with good stuff. Bye now.